We're holding on page Lamed Hey in Megillah, the last paragraph. Middle of Islam and Gimel. The parak is talking about, again, a lot of the discussion in this parak is about the dinim of a shul and the dinim of Tashmishi Kedusha and things like that. So now the Mishnah talks about that when you're selling something of lesser Kedusha, you can use the money to buy something of higher Kedusha, but not the other way around. So the Gemara says, they had a question. Would you be allowed to sell an old Sefer Torah where you're going to use the money to buy a new? And the Gemara goes through a whole discussion about all the pros and cons of it. And eventually, Toshma, you can sell a Sefer Torah only if you're going to use the money you need it in order to learn Torah, in other words, to support yourself. Either to support yourself while you're learning, or to pay schar limud, as the case may be, v'lisa isha, or to have money to be able to get married. Shmamina, now doesn't that prove? The Gemara says, Torah b'Torah, shop your dummy. Apparently, it's fine to sell a sefer Torah to buy another sefer Torah, because in effect, when we're saying that you can sell a sefer Torah in order to learn Torah, that would amount to, it actually explains, the Gemara assumes that that's the same thing as buying another sefer Torah. So we see that we're mutter. The Gemara says not necessarily Dilma Shiny. You could say that it's different. Shiny in Dilma Shiny Talmud, it may be different when it comes to learning. That's more than just buying a Sefer Torah. Shat Talmud, maybe the Demaisa. As we know, you have the discussion in Kiddushin where the Chachamim argued which is greater, learning Torah or Maisa Mitzvahs, and the conclusion was that Talmud is greater because it brings to Maisa, because a person can't do the Mitzvahs if they haven't learned Torah and they don't know what to do and what not to do. So therefore, you could say that a person being able to do Talmud Torah is greater even than buying a Sefer Torah. So therefore, you could say that there's a heter to do that. That doesn't necessarily mean there would be a heter to sell one Sefer Torah in order to buy another one. Isha Nami, and when it comes to getting married also, there's a reason why it's more important even than a Sefer Torah, because after all, the Pasuk says, Lo Toyo Bra, Hashem didn't create the world to be nothingness, Lo Sheves Yitzara, Hashem fashioned the world in order that it should be settled, which from that we learn, you have a mitzvah, Pru Avu, but on top of that, the Chlal, you have a mitzvah to get married, even when Pru Avu, for one reason or another, isn't going to happen. So therefore, you could say that Lisa Isha all alone is important enough to override the dinim about selling a Sefer Torah. Aval Torah, but Torah loy, not necessarily would that mean that you could sell one Sefer Torah in order to buy another. And in fact, the Gemara leaves the question unresolved. So the Gemara continues in this vein, Tanan Rabbanan, lo yimka odim Sefer Torah af bishen et Torah loy. A person should not sell a Sefer Torah even if he doesn't need it anymore, whether because... So Rashi says, because he has another one. Now, every person, after all, a person has a mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah. So if he only has the one, then it's not that he doesn't need it. Necessarily, he needs it in order to be Mekayim the mitzvah. So we mean if he has another one. Nevertheless, he shouldn't sell the first one. Yes, Rakein Om Reb Shimon Gamliel. Reb Shimon Gamliel goes beyond that. He says, Afilo Emle Mayoichal. Even if a person doesn't have what to eat, or mochar say, now the poskim do say, it doesn't literally mean like he's starving to death, obviously, because nefesh is kola, it means that he's having a hard time, like he can barely make ends meet. Or mochar sefer Torah, and he sells a sefer Torah, or we know, the Torah tells us in Parshas Mishpatim, that a father can sell his daughter as an omar hevriya, but nevertheless, if he does that, even though, again, that's the kind of thing a person is allowed to do when he's in extreme circumstances, nevertheless, he'll never see a simen bracha from that money. He's going to wind up spending it on something else, on something else unexpected or whatever, and it's not going to end up being a bracha for him.
How old does she have to be?
So she can be up to bas mitzvah age. She can be up to bas mitzvah age. She would work until six years are over, or yovel, or she develops shtei Cyrus, or yovel comes, or the odin dies. You have like six different ways where she could go free. But yeah, basically the Torah talks about it at the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. You sell her to a yid. The idea is supposed to be, ideally, either that master or his son will marry her, which is called yiud, and then, in other words, so it'll come out that in retrospect, the father selling her as an amar hevriya turned out to be a way of arranging a shidduch for her. But so again, a father is allowed to do it, but he should only do it in the most extreme circumstances.
Father marries her; he'll be much older than her. His son doesn't.
Yeah, maybe not necessarily. Anyway, yeah. Okay. Anyway, the point is, Rav Shimon Gamliel saying any roi simin bracha lo'olam. With that said, by the way, Shiltis, for the famous sefer Shiltis that Rav Choy Goyin points out, when we say any roi simin bracha, we don't mean when he's selling it for one of the two purposes that we said before, to learn Torah or to get married. That's a legitimate reason to sell it. Here we're selling it. Here we're saying when a person is selling it just in order to raise money for food. There are taka because of that. You have various dinim. For example, we have the minhag that a person owns a sefer Torah. He doesn't give it to his local shul. He lends it to them. Basically, it stays in the Oren Kodesh in the shul, but it's still his property. And we know ma'isim b'chol yom, people who own sefer Torah sometimes take them with them when they go away for Yom Tov or whatever, because it's theirs after all. So that way, that avoids this whole issue of giving or selling a sefer Torah of yours, because it is yours after all. You're just lending it to the shul as a long-term thing. With that said, though, there is, for example, there are other legitimate purposes as well. First of all, Eitz Yosef brings over here from a Tosfos in Baba Basra that says another example would be Pidyon Shvuyim. You could sell a Sefer Torah where you need to raise money for Pidyon Shvuyim. We're not mentioning over here because it's obvious. So we're talking about the things that Lumud Torah and Lisaisha, which is less obvious, but certainly there's no question that Pidyon Shvuyim is important enough for that. There's also a story involving the Ben Ishchai that I came across recently, actually, where he writes on himself. He didn't have money to publish his Sfar. Him and he really wanted to, so he decided that that's a legitimate reason to sell a Sefer Torah. He had a Sefer Torah that he had inherited from his ancestors, but he decided that that kind of thing to be able to spread his Chedushei Torah to the world is a legitimate reason enough to sell his Torah. And he describes a whole arichos over there. He was going to attempt to sell it to one of the barons Rothschild, and then he was told that the guy's not going to be interested. But Kitzer Amaisa, eventually he managed to publish his Sfarim, and of course we have them. So he describes over there he had this lady who was a go-between. She's the daughter of a big gvir of that time, Sasson, and then she was supposed to be the go-between to Rothschild, and in the end she tells him, I don't think Rothschild's gonna be interested. So he says, fine, you hold on to it until you can figure out what's gonna happen to it. Whether we know where that Sefer Torah is nowadays, I have no idea.
What's the idea when it's so strong that it says don't see him walk because
it's bizarre to the Sefer Torah, basically, yeah. That seems to be the idea.
Embarrassing
that you're selling the Sefer Torah for some purpose which is not important enough. Again, so we have several exceptions. Again, we're saying in order to learn Torah is a legitimate purpose. In order to raise money to get married is also a legitimate purpose. When a person is poshut starving and has no food, then the post can say, that's not what we mean, aimly mayocha. We mean where he's having a hard time. With it. And then we have, and the other one that Tosfos mentions is Pidyon Shvuyim. So even though it's going to be used in a different shul, nevertheless, yeah. It's the fact that you're selling it, right. Yeah, exactly. Which is, that's what I'm saying. When a person owns a Sefer Torah, then the minhag is, you don't give it to the shul, let alone sell it to them. You lend it to the shul, basically. The shul can use it on an ongoing basis, but you still retain ownership of it. Further on, the Gemara talks about dinim, about the kedusha of a place where you daven, and the Gemara mentions a point that you're not allowed to urinate within 4 amos of a place. If you're not using it, then I don't know. Then that's it. Okay, so then, no, so the same thing. You shouldn't sell it, but then give it to a local shul that can use it. I have, there's somebody here in town, actually, that I have an example of that. There's a person I know who, he had a Sefer Torah that he had commissioned some years back. He kept it in his house. They used it once in a while, but not very often. But when a shul opened on my block and we needed a Sefer Torah, I asked if he could lend it to us long term, and he did. We were using it now. The shul opened during COVID. We're using the Sefer Torah 4 years now. Anyway. So the Gemara goes on to discuss dinim about the kedusha of the place where you daven. One thing it mentions is you're not allowed to urinate within 4 amos of where you daven Shemoneh Esrei. So the Gemara discusses, what does that mean exactly? Does it mean, for example, let's say a person davens in the street, then you're never allowed to urinate within 4 amos of that? The Gemara says, in that case, then the Gemara has an expression, then in that case, all the alleys of Nahadah, you would never be able to, because people inevitably are davening at one time or another in them. So the Gemara ends up explaining what it really means is that once you finished saying Shemoneh Esrei, if you have to urinate, wait the time it takes to say to walk 4 amos. Because the idea is, the Gemara says, right after you finish davening, your lips are still murmuring the words of the tefillah, and therefore it wouldn't be respectful that then you're going to go and urinate. But if you wait 4 amos, then already the time it takes to walk 4 amos, which is a couple of seconds, then you finish with that. So now that leads the Gemara into a piece of Agadah over here, where one of the Chachamim says that he was extra careful with that. Shala Talmidim as Rab Zakkai. Rab Zakkai's Talmidim asked him, "Bameher achta yamim, with what zchus did you live long?" Is this Rabbi Yochanan's father? Anaf Yosef brings up from Sefer Yochsin that it may have been, but the Seder Adri brings from the Seder Adoris and says, no, it's Sarach Iyun, because Rabbi Yochanan is always called Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He's never called, if his father himself was this Reb Zakkai, then we would expect to call him Rabbi Yochanan ben Reb Zakkai, the same way as other Tanoim whose fathers were Tanoim themselves are called Reb Ploini ben Reb Ploini. Here that he's just called ben Zakkai is mashma that it maybe wasn't the same one. That said, the truth is, I mean, up to the time of Hillel and Shammai, B'chlau, we have the whole concept of Gadol Mirab and Shmoy. The title Rebbe was not really in widespread use yet. So you could infer and say that maybe the Gemara is calling here Reb Zakkai because he's mentioned by himself. But when he's mentioned in connection with his son, maybe it's not mentioned because maybe he didn't go by that title regularly. Anyway, so they asked him, "Meher achta yamim, in what schus did you live on?" Omalahem. So he tells them, "Mi yomai la hishtanti mayim b'dalat amas shal tefila." I never urinated within the four amos of where I daven. Now, so what's the chiddush? If we said that you're also to do that, there's no chiddush that he actually fulfilled that. Tosfos says there could be a case where it's perfectly mutter. We just said in the Gemara before where he waited the time it takes to walk four amos. Nevertheless, he would be machmir on himself and not do that. There's a lot of different explanations among different mefoshim and different poskim about different other angles on what it was exactly that he was machmir on. And one of them, in fact, the Magen Avraham says, the Gemara had mentioned that it means distance-wise, you shouldn't urinate within four amos of a place where previously Shemana Esrei had been davened. Now, the Gemara had objected to that if you're going to go like that, all the streets of Nahada are going to be also to urinate in. But nevertheless, we're saying Reb Zakkai was machmir even to that degree.
The Rambam
says
you can have hold for four hours.
That what?
Let's say if a person needs to go to the bathroom,
yeah,
and he can hold it four steps timing wise. That's called.
That's what we're saying. The loy kinisi shem lachaveri. The next thing Reb Zakkai says is, I never gave a nickname to somebody else. Now, Tosfos points out, if it's a derogatory nickname, then there's no chiddush. In fact, the Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia, it was a few weeks ago in Daf Yomi, that a person does that, ein lechevet lo mabah. He would mean, even if it's not a derogatory nickname, but stam a nickname, he wouldn't call somebody else by that, because maybe the guy is not going to like it. And so it's one of the 24 things that's ma'akev tshuva, yeah. But again, here we're not talking about a derogatory nickname, we're talking about stam, a nickname, and he wouldn't do that either. V'lo bitalti kiddush hayom, and I was never mevatel the kiddush of the kiddush of Shabbos. Which means, in other words, now, well, so one second. So Marsha says, now, you have there are the poskim who say that you can make kiddush on bread. So then that, obviously, he had bread and ate kiddush al makom soda. So what's the kiddush? It means that he was never mevatel. He always was careful to do kiddush on wine. He wouldn't use the kula of making kiddush on bread. He would always make sure to have wine. The Rashba says the same thing basically over here. The Rif also points out that really, actually, you know, when you have when wine is available, sure, you're supposed to make kiddush hayom on wine. When it's not so easily available, you technically don't need to. But he was machmir to go the extra mile and do that. And he gives an example: imaz kena hoisali. I had an old mother. Imaz kena could mean that his mother was old. It could mean his grandmother, whatever. Pa machas laholi kiddush. One time, I didn't have wine for kiddush. Machra kippah shal rosha. So she sold the cap that she usually wore on her head. Obviously, she's not going to go bareheaded, so it means that now she would wear some kind of cheaper tichol or something. And she used that money that she sold it for and brought me wine for kiddush. So we see it. She realized how careful Reb Zakkai is with that, and she wanted to make sure that he's not going to have to miss 1 week, and therefore she went that extra mile. Tana, we learn in a braisa, Shemesahi, when she eventually passed away, they were so rich that he nichola shin garbe yayin. She left him as an inheritance 300 barrels of wine. Shemes hu, and later on, when Reb Zakkai, he lived a long life, as we're saying, but eventually he passed away. He niach levonim, gimel alofim garbe yayin. He left for his descendants, 3,000, for his children, 3,000 barrels of wine. I guess the Pashtus, you could say, the difference is she wasn't the one who was always nizer in it herself. She was just doing it in order to help out her son or her grandson. Meaning Rav Zakkai himself was the one who was always careful with it. So therefore the Eibishter rewarded him much more greatly. Even though technically Shabbos day you can be yotzer with bread or with chamam and dinner or whatever, he didn't want it. What? You could also be yotzer with somebody else's kiddush. This is true, yeah. But he was always makbid to make his own kiddush on wine. Okay. Another example the Gemara gives of another one of the chachamim who was extra careful to always use wine for kiddush. Rav Huna have a osir risa. Rav Huna one time was wearing a belt made out of woven grass. V'koy kamei de Rav, and he's standing as a Talmud in front of Rav. Omalei my high. So Rav asked him, "What happened? Ham yonach echa? Where's your belt?" Omalei, so Rav Huna tells him, "Lihavali chamra lekiddusha. I didn't have wine for kiddush. Umashkanti lehem yonoi. So I pawned my belt. I took it to a pawn shop to get money for it temporarily. V'alsisi beyain kiddusha, and I bought wine for kiddush." Omalei, so Rav tells him, "Where's a bracha? Yehei Rava, may it be the Eibishter's will, the titum b'shiroi, that you should be covered with silk clothing, which of course would be very expensive. In other words, in short, you should become rich." Well, time passed. When Rav Huna's son Rabba was getting married, Achlal is a Meloshin like Avas Kloloi Soyich, so it means when the wedding of Rabba, Rav Huna's son, was taking place. Now, Inish Gutzahava, now Rabba was a short, Rav Huna rather, was a short man. Oyo Gona Apuya, so he went in at one point during all the festivities, he went to lie down on a bed. Asan bin Sepakalse, his daughters and his daughters-in-law came into the room and they didn't realize he was sleeping on the bed. Shochan, they took off their coats for Shadyan Mani Ilavei, and they were putting their coat, they were throwing their coats on the bed on top of him, and they were silk coats. So in other words, the bracha had come true, and Rav Huna is very rich now. Ad itu mishiroi. So literally he woke up and he's covered with silk clothing. Now, why does it mention? So why does it mention that he was short? So one second. So first, also Rav Yosef Ashkechei Omalei he came bach birchse de Rav. So Rav Yosef came and saw Rav Huna and said, "You know what? Look, Rav's bracha has been literally fulfilled." But that's only here in Ein Yaakov. It's not in the printed Gemaras. But anyway, he shama Rav when Rav heard what happened. Ikbad, he was upset about it. What? Yeah, he shama Rav ikbad. Omar, he says, now you have two different Yusois over here. The printed Gemara is my time, like Amrit Li, Kiberachtich. Why didn't you tell me when I gave you the bracha? So he's saying directly to Rav Huna, the Ein Yaakov's Gil says, Amai loy Omar Li Kiberachtiv, that he's saying in third person to Rav Yosef or whoever it is that told him what happened. Why didn't he say, Bechem Lamar? He should have said, and so also to you, Rebbe. In other words, it might have been an Eser, it obviously was an Eser Rotsin then, Rav is saying, when I gave the bracha. So he should have answered back, Bechem Lamar, and that way the bracha would be on me as well.
Because now he only got it on his bed.
No, therefore, that means that his family was rich enough that they could all afford silk coats. So it means that, but the bracha literally came true as well. Now, why does it mention that he was short, though? Balabatish, you could say, because since he was short, they didn't notice him lying on the bed. Had he been a taller person, they might have noticed. But Rabbi Yaakov Emden says an interesting point in it. He says, maybe that's Taka. We find that Rav, here we're saying Rav Huna was short. On the other hand, we find in other Gemaras that Rabba was very tall. In fact, he was nicknamed Abba Aricha, which means Abba the Tall. So therefore, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, Rav Huna maybe didn't want to say V'chein Lamar, because what would that mean? That you're going to be covered up as much as I'm going to be covered up with silk cloths. It's only going to be half of you because you're twice my height or something. So therefore, according to that, maybe is why he didn't say it. But Rav is saying, you should have said it. I would have had some degree of this bracha.
The other day,
there's
a show, Rosh Hashiva,
Mira. Yeah.
Must be the time. I was asking for a bracha. Gives me a bracha. I said, "Shekayah." Said, "Sof
v'chein lemar." Yeah, that's about exactly this Gemara. Yeah. Next, Shola Talmidim asked Rabbi Lozer ben Shamua b'meher after Yomim. Rabbi Lozer ben Shamua's Talmidim also asked him, "What schus did you have that you live long?" By the way, you know, we have he was one of the Asor Arugim Malchus, one of the Midrashim that tells about it. Says that when he was killed by the Romans, he was 105. So already he had had Aruchos, already he had been Zeuche to Aruchos Yom, and it hadn't been for them, who knows how much longer he would have lived. Anyway, Omelahem, he answers them, Mi Yomelay Asisi Besakneses Kapandaria, I never made a shul a shortcut. Now, you're not allowed to make a shul a shortcut, however, there are heterim for it. For example, if there used to be a shortcut there and then they built a shul on that spot, you're still allowed to, because you were allowed to go through there before, you're allowed to continue using the shul for it. Nevertheless, he was machmir not to. Another point is also sometimes you have, let's say you go into the shul for a purpose, to learn Torah or whatever, to learn Torah, to daven or whatever, then you're allowed to go out the opposite entrance. In fact, there's a different Gemara that says that you should. He was machmir on himself on that as well. Another point, actually, Marsha makes a point elsewhere where this Gemara is also brought in Sota, so it'll be coming up soon, and it'll be coming up later during Sfira, that he says, really, technically, the Isser to use a place as a kapandaria primarily is on the Beis HaMikdash. It's not really so much on a shul. Nevertheless, Rebbe Elazar ben Shamua was machmer on himself with a shul as well. So that's the first one. The second one, like, Pasaiti al Roshe Am Kodesh. I never stepped over the heads of the holy people. Meaning, we learned earlier in our Masechta that people would usually learn in Torah sitting on the ground. So now you'd have, if a person came late to the Beis Medrash, or if he had to go out for whatever reason and then come back in, he'd be stepping over people, so they would look like he's stepping over their heads. You can imagine also in 770, back in the day, you'd have people are walking along the tops of the benches over there and also like walking over people's heads. So again, you're not really supposed to do that. But again, there are cases where you're allowed to. In particular, Marsha brings from a Gemara in Yevamos, if Rabim Tzrichim Lo, if the Rabim need him to be there, as is true of Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, he's the Rosh Hashiva, the Dayan, whatever he is exactly, then he is entitled to do that. Nevertheless, he was machmir to not do that. Even in that case, he would make sure that he gets there before everybody else, so he doesn't have to step over people's heads or go a long way around or whatever. And the third thing is, when a sasi kapai b'lei bracha, I never duchen without saying a bracha. He was a kohen, you see. Now, what's the chiddush in that? Again, I mean, the kohenim have to say a bracha. So again, there's quite a lot of explanations. The ritva over here brings maybe he's not saying that it was a chiddush that he did. He wants you to know that when a kohen says the bracha and benches the people, that itself is a schus for arichus yamin. But there's many, many other different explanations. Marsha says that the Kohen might think to himself, look, the whole purpose of the mitzvah is for the good of the Jewish people, that Hashem should give his bracha, v'ani avorchem. Maybe I don't need to say a bracha on that. In other words, you could say, when do you say a bracha? When I myself am gaining something from a mitzvah. But here, it's not really for myself. It's more for the Jewish people. Should I have to say a bracha? Nevertheless, he was careful to do that. There are many, many other different explanations, including that he was careful to use, Anaf Yosef points out that he was careful to use the words Asher Kedushonim B'Kedushas Shal Aaron. He wouldn't just say Asher Kedushonim B'Mitzvayis B'Tzivanu. There's another, the Meiri, I think, makes a point that we have after Birkas Kohenim, when we, the Tzibur, say Adir Amorim, at the same time, the Kohenim are saying the paragraph, Rebbeinu Shalom, Asisa Masha Gazarta Aleinu, asking for an extra bracha for the Jewish people, Ashkifim, one called Jachman Ashmaim. So that was his point. He was careful to do that. He might have said to himself, listen, I already benched them with three brachas, Yibarecha Yor Yisa. I need to add another bracha. Nevertheless, he would do that. There's also an explanation that the Rif brings over here, that he could have been Yotze with one of the other Kohenim's brachas, and he wasn't. There could be, if he's duchening multiple times a day, should he have to say the bracha each time? Maybe technically he doesn't need to. Nevertheless, so there's a lot of different possibilities of what Rebbe Elazar ben Shamua means by this. Another one, Charlotte Talmidim as Reb Preda's Talmidim asked him, Meher Achti Yamim, what'd you live long with? Now, Tosfos brings, we have the famous story in Erevin, where he had a Talmud he would have to teach him everything 400 times, and then one time the Talmud was distracted because he thought Reb Preda asked to leave, and then Reb Zera wound up having to teach him the thing 800 times, and a Basco came out and said, what do you want? Do you want that you should live 400 years in the exclusive that you're always teaching this Talmud 400 times, and now you went the extra 400 times, or would you rather your whole Dur has Chaya Olam Haba? He says, I'd rather that my whole generation has Chaya Olam Haba. So the Basco says, let him have both. So in that case, what do you mean by meher achti yomim? The answer is because of that story. So Tosfos says, because to begin with, he didn't know. Eventually, once he saw, looking back, I've lived hack of 400 years, now he realized that must be what happened. I must have gotten both brachas from Hashem, even though I only asked for chaya and mabah for my generation. But now, earlier, when he was not quite as old as that, then his Talmidim asked him, by now, you've lived longer than average, so what was your schus? So he answers them, first of all, nobody ever came before me to the Beis Medrash. I was always there first. I never benched in preference to a koyin. Meaning, in other words, when there was a mezuman to be made, I would always defer to a koyin and let him be the one to lead the mezuman. Which the Gemara is going to discuss in a minute. Is he supposed to do that? A Tamar Chacham is not supposed to do that. He's not supposed to give way to a koyin am haaretz for that. So we'll get back to that in a minute. But anyway. The Kiddushta, yeah. But on the other hand, the Kiddushta is only, on the other hand, you also have the covered of Torah, the covered of a Talmud Chacham is important as well. So yeah. So, and Reb Preda says, the third thing is, I was careful always to not eat from an animal where the Matonis, the Zroi L'chayayim B'keva, had not been taken off. Which in fact, the Amr of Yitzchak, Amr of Yechanan, also Lechom B'hema, Shalehumu Mat Neseh. Reb Yitzchak says, you actually also to eat from such an animal. The Amr of Yitzchak, and further, Rabbi Yitzchak says, "Kol oichem abehema shalaihumu matneseha." If you eat from an animal where the zroi l'chayayim v'keva were not taken off, kiyilo oichel tvolin. It's the equivalent of eating tevel. The same way as you can't eat from grain or other produce or whatever before truma and maisus are taken out. Rabbi Yitzchak is saying you're not allowed to eat from an animal before the matonis were taken out. However, the Gemara says, "V'les hilchsa kavasei." The halacha is not like it. Now, Maharsha says this is all part of Reb Preda's statement. That Reb Preda is saying that I know the halacha is not like these statements of Reb Yitzchak. You are in fact allowed to eat from an animal where the matonis were not taken out. Nevertheless, I was always machmir on myself not to. What taka is the difference? Why indeed is it not like tevel? The Ritva elsewhere points out because, for one thing, when it comes to truma and maisris, any particular grain of wheat or any particular drop of wine or what have you could conceivably be truma or could conceivably be maiser. Here you have the zroi l'chayayim v'keva are certain defined parts of the animal, and therefore, so you can't say the rest of the animal is part of the zroi l'chayayim v'keva the way you could say that the rest of the pile of grain is part of truma. Also, you have the point that truma has actual intrinsic kedusha, whereas the zroi l'chayayim v'keva don't. You have to give them to the koyin, but after that, the koyin can do whatever he wants with them. He can give them to Israel. He can even give them even to a goy, etc. And therefore, they're much different in that sense than truma and maisa. We haven't gotten to it yet. Wait, yeah. So the Gemara asks, when we say v'loy berachti lifnei koyin, when he's saying that I never led birkas hamazon ahead of a koyin, the question is lemer d'mal yosehi. Are you telling me that this is a good thing? Now, yes, you have the mitzvah of the Kiddushah, but on the other hand, v'omer Rabbi Baba Chana, omer Rabbi Yonasan, or Rabbi Yochanan, kol tamid chacham shemavorech lefanav afilo kohen gadol amaoretz, when a tamid chacham allows a kohen gadol, let alone a regular kohen, who is an amaoretz, to lead benching ahead of him, oise tamid chayav misa. That tamid, fakert, is not a good thing. He's chayav misa for that, because he's degrading the Torah. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, hold on. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Kol Mesanai Ohavu Mavs. The Pasuk says, all those who hate me, and this is referring to the Torah, Marsha points out over here, he refers to a Gemara in Shabbos, where he explains the whole Perek, that this Pasuk, these words are the last words, Perek Ches of Mishlei, that entire Perek is talking about the Torah. A large part of it is the Torah personified, saying, come and learn me, and you're going to find out how important and how good I am. And it finishes off, Kol Masanai, all those who hate me, Ohavu Moves, love death. Now, Altikri Misanai, don't read those who hate me, Ela Masnii, those who make me hate it. In other words, therefore, when a person does not act in a way that degrade the Torah and makes it seem as though the Torah is not important, then, so like this, Rashi explains, when people see that a Talmid Chacham makes himself less important in front of an Am Haaretz, so he's going to say to himself, "Ein nachas ruach b'Torah." There's obviously no benefit in learning Torah, because otherwise, why is the Talmid Chacham acting humbly in the presence of the Am Haaretz? So Adrabba, what is Reb Preda doing if he's saying that I'm always allowing a Koyin to lead benching instead of me? We're saying that's no good. And the answer is, Kika amayu nami b'shovin. You're right. What he's talking about is when he and the Koyin are on an equal level. When they're both Tamar Chachamim, which Tosfos says, okay, if they're literally equal, then there's no Chiddush, of course, then you have the mitzvah of the Kiddushah. What we mean is the other guy is a Tamar Chacham, but not of the caliber of Reb Preda. Nevertheless, since he is a Tamar Chacham, he's not after all an Am Haaretz, then Reb Preda would tell him to go first and to lead benching instead of him. In this connection, actually, you have an interesting point when it comes to, you know, Tosfos mentions in this connection the whole matter of a koyin being given the first aliyah. Technically, you have, again, a Talmud Chacham is supposed to go ahead of a koyin. The Rambam, when he deals with this in Pirush HaMishnayos, the Mishnah in Gittin, mentions that Mipnei Darkei Shalom, you have Koyim, then Levi, then Yisrael, but the Rambam mentions over there, based on the Gemara and Gittin, that really, when you have a Talmud Chacham there, an outstanding Talmud Chacham in Shul, it's not supposed to be like that, it's supposed to be that he gets the first Aliyah ahead of the Koyim, and the Rambam speaks very sharply over there about the minhag that they have in many places where they give the Koyim indiscriminately and they don't care whether he's an Amma Oretz or not, and the Rambam says this is not right, it's a bizoyan to Torah, etc., based on this Gemara and based on other Gemaras. However, by the time that Rambam wrote the Yad HaChazaka, it seems he had kind of given in, you know, and look, this is the minhag, and it can't, he writes, the minhag poshut is that they call the Koyin first, and there's not really a lot that we can do about it, so, yeah.
People don't really know who's an Amoretz.
We also don't know who's an Amoretz, it's true, yeah, it's also true that we don't necessarily have Tamar Chacham of such great caliber among us, but yeah. Yeah, there is that, yeah.
Alex, they don't make them like they used to.
Yeah. Okay, onward.
But why do you say Talmud? Why doesn't...
Because you mean a Talmud Chacham, in other words, you're saying. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Rashi says, people got the aims.
I guess because the Kibbud Avraham, there's no Chiddush. The Talmudim wouldn't be asking why he had Arichus Yomim just because of Kibbud Avraham, because of Shaloh HaKan, because that would be obvious. They're asking about other things, and each of them is saying various special Hanhogas that he himself had. Okay. The next one, Shal Talmudim Asrab Nechuni Ben Hakona Bameh Arach Yomim. Omalahem, so Rab Nechuni answers them, Mi Yomayla Nisim.
The idea is that there is something you take on
yourself. Yeah, have a type of thing. Yeah. So Omalahem, he answers them. First of all, I never got honor from something that would embarrass somebody else, which the Gemara is going to explain in a few lines what that means. And we mean, in other words, even if the guy is willing to bear the embarrassment, as the Gemara is going to give the example in a couple of lines, that Rav Nechunya would not allow. The second thing is, he's saying, if somebody cursed me out, I would never allow that to go to bed with me. Meaning, in other words, Marsha says, I would wait to see if the guy is going to come and ask mechila for me during the day. But if he doesn't, then I would mechila him before I go to bed. We have the tefillah, we have the paragraph that we say, is based on this concept. The Zohar, in fact, tells a story in that connection. The Zohar tells a story that there was one time Rab Abba is outside the city of Lud, and he sees a guy sleeping on a rock over there, where the rock itself is very precariously balanced, and if the guy doesn't wake up soon, it's going to fall down the cliff, and that's going to be the end of him. Plus, Rabbi Abba sees that there's a snake about to bite the guy. All of a sudden, a branch breaks off a nearby tree and lands on the snake and kills it. And then the guy wakes up from his nap and gets off the rock and goes his way, and only then does the rock fall off the cliff. So Rabbi Abba runs over to the guy and he says, you must have some tremendous schuz that you were saved from being killed in two different ways. And the guy tells him, because I'm noyig like this. When somebody insulted me that day, I never go to bed before I'm noyig like that. So here Rav Nechunya is saying a similar thing. And the third thing, uvatran hayisi b'mamoni. And the third thing is, I was always extra generous with my money, as the Gemara is going to go on to say that I wouldn't be medactic to the shava pruta with somebody else. I'd be generous towards the other guy, for example, when it comes to making change. So what do we mean by each of these things? Now, there's no chiddush, obviously, that he would mean that he's not going to say something embarrassing about somebody else in order to make himself look better. There's no chiddush that you're not allowed to do such a thing. What it means is, it happened once that Rav Huna was carrying a shovel on his shoulders. This is the time when we said before, when Rav Huna was very poor and he could barely afford wine for kiddush. So at one point, he's working as a laborer and carrying a shovel on his shoulders. Yeah, by the way, other stories in the Gemara from that period in his life. There's a story in Ksubas, for example, where it mentions that one time he's on top of a tree, taking care of the tree, picking dates or whatever it is he's doing over there. And people call up to him. They say, we need you to judge a din Torah. And he tells them, then you got to find somebody to take over the job over here, because I'm a hired laborer over here. I can't just slack off from the job to go judge your din Torah. Anyway. So he's carrying this shovel. So Rav Chana Bar Chaniloi came and was trying to take the shovel away from him. Why should you, the great Talmud Chacham, Rav Huna, have to carry the shovel? I'll carry it for you. So Rav Huna tells him, if you regularly carry such a thing in your city, fine, then carry it, because it's obviously not a bizoyan for you. The Eloi, but if not, it would be beneath your dignity to do that where you come from. I don't want to get honored through that you're going to be degraded. So this is what we're saying. In other words, even Rav Chana is perfectly willing to do it, to be Meshamesh Tamar Chachamim, but Rav Chana is telling him no. So now Rav Nachmanu Ben Akana is saying that he followed the same path. What does he mean? So like we said, Ki Hodim Marzutra, as we have an example, Marzutra in a later generation did the same kind of thing. Ki have a solik lapuria before he went to bed, Omar, he would say, Shori I forgive anybody who harmed me or troubled me today.
Vexed,
yeah, would be a good word for it. Yeah.
Besides the right thing to do,
health-wise, it's also good for you. It's true, yeah. Yeah, it's true. Marsha, in fact, refers to an interesting thing. You have a pasuk in Tehillim that expresses this idea. In Kapitel Dalet, David HaMelech says, "Anmech voidi l'chlima, how long are you enemies of mine going to be embarrassing my honor? You're going to be claiming that I because of the thing of Bathsheba and other things like that." And eventually, at the end of the perek, "V'sholem yachdav eshkavav ishan," I'm going to lay down and go to sleep. "V'sholem in peace yachdav as one with them, because I'm moichel them before I go to bed." Each of them had three things that they were machmir in, yeah. Yeah, I guess so. And the third thing is, Vatran Mamoni Hoyisi, he says, the third thing is, I would forego money, even money that's rightly mine. To Omamar, as we have an example involving Eo, Vatran Mamoni Hava, the Gemara mentions in Baba Basra, there's a long sugya over there, darshaning various psukim from Eov and giving us a fuller picture of what the man was like. So the Gemara darshaning one of the psukim over there in Eov that says that he was a vatran mamone. He would forego money that was rightly his. He would leave a pruta of his money for the storekeeper, meaning in other words, he wouldn't demand exact change. The Gemara there in Baba Basra actually says it differently, that usually a person would demand from the storekeeper, even if there's a tiny amount, a half pruta as change, a person would usually want it back, but Eov would be moichel on it. Marsha actually there has an interesting discussion about that. The Gemara there in that sugya in Baba Basra has a long discussion who was Eov, and there's one mandama there that there's different opinions there whether he was Jewish or not. We know famously, for example, it says he was one of Paray's advisors. According to that, it would be he was not Jewish. You have the thing that you have the drosha Hayesh Ba'etz, when Moshe is sending the Meraglim, find out if Eov is still alive and Eov's force is protecting them, which would also imply that he's not a Yid. On the other hand, then the Gemara brings various mandamas that he was. So now Marsha says, if you say he was not a yid, well then we know that we know when it comes to gezel like this by a yid, the concept of gezel only applies from a shava pruta and more. But by a goy, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin ben noyach nerga pochas mishava pruta. So then the chiddush was that unlike most bnei noyach, he was vatran on a half a pruta. Then Marsha says another possibility. The Gemara also says over there the famous expression kol anoto pruta me'iyev misbarich, that anybody who would receive even a pruta from Eov would receive a special bracha along with it. So Eov, if let's say that there was somebody that he owed half a pruta to, he would make sure not just give him half a pruta, give him a full pruta. That way the bracha can be chal on it. So we see that it was vatran mamamona, and again Rav Nachmanu ben Akana would act in the same way. Another one. Shor Rav Akiva asked Rav Nachmanu HaGadol. Rav Akiva asked Rav Nachmanu HaGadol, who were pashtus, is someone different than Rav Nachmanu ben Akana. He asked him again, Amalei b'meher achti yamin. Now, unlike all the other ones where nobody minded, because all the other ones up until now was Shalom Talmidov, here for the first time you have Rav Akiva, who's not necessarily a Talmud of Rav Nachmanu HaGadol. So Rav Nachmanu's servants came, and they were hitting him because they thought, like, you're asking what made you live so long? Why do you have to still be alive for? Who needs you anymore? So that's a very insulting thing. So therefore, they were hitting Rav Akiva, thinking he's stamming some nudnik who's coming to bother Rav Nachmanu. Solik Yosef Bedikla or Aresha Bedikla, Rav Akiva climbed up onto a palm tree where he'd be high up and they couldn't get him. Omalei, and from there he calls down to show his credentials as a Talmud Chacham. He says, Rebbe, im nema keves loma nema echad. When we have in the a keves echad, tasav aboker, if it says keves, which is already Loshen Yochid, why does it have to say echad? Umay echod. So why does it say echod? Omalei. So Rav Nachmanja answers him. Echod means miyuchad shebe'edrei. It means the unique one, the most special one in the herd is the one that should be used for the korban. The point is, in other words, that he had asked a question in Torah. Omalehu. So he tells them. Who, you know what? He's a tamid chacham. Shavkuha delesi. Let him come down. Let him ask me in person. He's obviously not asking in order to harass. He's asking because he genuinely wants to know to be able to learn Torah. Eyon Yaakov points out there's a remez why he's asking this particular question. He's saying that keves echod implies that there's one special one in the herd. So the same way, someone like me, someone like you, who's the greatest gadol ador, should be bearing the averus of the tzibur. So why is it then that you you have the schus to live so long? So he answers me, Yomai lekibalti matonis. I never received presents in my life. Since the pasuk says a person who hates gifts will live. Say I was never particular about my midis, meaning if somebody insulted me or did something bad to me, I would never try to get back at him. I would always be moichel him on the spot. And I was always like Rav Nachmanja, I was always generous, like the other Rav Nachmanja, I was always generous with my money. So we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, and analyze those three things. Yem Yem Mashiach Ba'ola. The chiddush is that you have cases where you could take matonis. There are the Gemara mentions in other places. The Talmud Chacham. There are cases where Talmud Chacham is entitled to take matonis. Nevertheless, he didn't want to do it. The Gemara actually is going to give some examples, which we'll get to tomorrow. The Rebbe gave dollars. That was for tzedakah. That's different.
Well, matonis.
People used to give the Rebbe matonis. I mean, again, there's different kinds. The Rebbe wasn't using them for his own personal purposes. He's using them for Lubavitch's work. That's it. Okay. Anyway. Okay. Eretz Yisrael, the entire Eretz Yisrael consists of land of the 10 lands that were bequeathed to the Jewish people forever, and they were Yerusha for us ever since Bris Ben Amsorim. The chiddush in Mashiach's time is that we'll have the extra three lands, the Keni, Knezi, and Kadmoni, and we're going to have them b'darchei Noyim and b'darchei Shalom. Because at that point, since as the Rambam says, there won't be any famine or war, etc., so therefore the Goyim will hand them over to us b'ritzoin ma'tov, with their own free will. Yeah. Halachos, continuing on Halachos of Shabbos, you're allowed to on Shabbos, you're allowed to ask somebody to fill up a container for you, let's say, and then after Shabbos, you'll deal with, you're not talking about payment or measurement or anything on Shabbos, even if it's a container that's used for measuring, and even if it belongs to the seller and you're taking it home, then you would be allowed to do such a thing. You're just not allowed to measure with a keli that's specifically meant for measuring and then pour into the lokeach's keli, then you can't do that. You have other similar dinim involving with that, which mostly it talks about connecting with Yom Tov, because Yom Tov you're more able to carry home, but the same dinim do apply to Shabbos as well.